Ireland's economy is about to move out of intensive care. From 8 p.m. in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. First, General Motors, now all of Ireland. The U.S. government this week sold its remaining stake in the automotive company, a stake acquired to help GM stay in business during the great financial collapse. This weekend, Ireland will finish with its European Union bailout. The BBC's Dermot Fleming is in Dublin. Dermot, good morning.
Good morning, David.
Help me understand what it means to exit the bailout.
Well, Ireland in 2008 basically went under because the government had guaranteed the unknown debts of its banks. It turns out then that these debts were much greater than the government had envisaged, requiring the country to get a bailout of $90 billion. And it was a three-year programme. The IMF were running it with the European Union and the European Central Bank. And that comes to an end formally on Sunday. For politicians, they're making great hay out of this to say that it's Ireland moving on the way to standing on its own two feet. But for many people here in Ireland, it's still business as usual in terms of trying to make ends meet in a very difficult situation here economically.
Well, let's talk about that. Dermot, you were in Ireland during the boom years, real estate prices going through the roof, so many jobs that people were coming in droves from places like Poland. The economy in Ireland is very different now.
Conditions are very, very tough for people here. There have been increases in taxes. People have very high mortgages. Anybody who bought property to live in during that time still has those mortgages to pay off. The cost of living is still high, yet there is uncertainty about employment. And in particular, because the banks are in difficulty, there isn't the flow of money to be loaned to businesses here to expand. So it's still a pretty uncertain economic picture here. Very, very difficult.
The BBC's Dermot Fleming in Dublin. Dermot, thank you.
You're welcome.
Spain also doesn't plan to reapply for more bailout money. The same cannot be said for Greece. If there were a cable series, Thankless Jobs, the pilot episode could be this one. Later this morning, the Senate Finance Committee is expected to vote on a new leader of the Internal Revenue Service. John Koskinen has to help the agency recover from scandal and carry out the IRS piece of the new health care law, Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
In his confirmation hearing this week, John Koskinen pledged to restore faith in the IRS.
In every area of the IRS, taxpayers need to be confident that they will be treated fairly, no matter what their background or their affiliations.
He's referring, of course, to revelations earlier this year that the agency gave extra scrutiny to Tea Party groups applying for tax-exempt status. Koskinen has turnaround experience. He was brought in to rebuild mortgage giant Freddie Mac after the credit crisis. Eugene Sturley with the Urban Institute says the new commissioner will also have to address the grim mood within the IRS.
What really builds morale are stories about how they're doing a good job, or they've reduced errors, or they're helping us try to solve some particular problems.
The spotlight is only likely to intensify as the new healthcare law rolls out. From next month, the IRS is charged with policing who gets tax credits to buy health insurance. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace is not some engulf and devour corporation. It is a nonprofit and it is listener supported. So to keep our coverage strong and relevant, what you could do is make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will really help us keep you up to date and well informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by the end of this year. Retailers gnash their teeth and call it showrooming. You and I may call it comparison shopping. The tendency to pop into a bricks and mortar store to check out the merchandise, but then buying online if the price is right. But the non-digital stores, the ones that exist in three dimensions, are responding with tactics of their own. From Birmingham, Alabama, Gigi Duban reports.
A couple years ago, a woman walked into the Track Shack, a running specialty shop near Birmingham. She was shopping for a new pair of running shoes. She tried on a bunch, finally settled on a pair, and headed toward the register with the sales guy.
And by the time they got to the counter with the shoes to make the purchase, she had found a pair online. She said, well, I don't want those. I just bought some online on her phone.
And that was the moment Scott Strand decided he had to do something. He's managing partner at the Track Shack. He put up a sign.
It says, please do not accept our service, then buy online. Support your local retailer.
Translation, don't showroom here. The sign is still up, but Strand estimates his store still loses tens of thousands of dollars each year to online retailers like Amazon. Big stores like Target and Best Buy are fighting back.
Now, what the brick-and-mortar retailers have done is they are trying to reduce that competitive disadvantage.
That's Shankar Ganesan. He edits the Journal of Retailing. He says big box retailers give incentives like price matching, and they offer same-day pickup for items ordered on their websites. So now we're seeing reverse showrooming, or web rooming as it's known.
That is, they go online first, check out things, and then buy it in the store.
Ganesan says retailers realized people are going to do their homework online. People like Laura Kate Whitney, a mom and community activist in Birmingham. When she was shopping for a leaf blower, she went online first to read customer reviews.
And so then I went to the store about a mile from my house to buy it.
She says she's an immediate gratification kind of gal.
Rather than waiting for it to be delivered to my house, I just get in my car and go find it locally.
Even if it costs a little more. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
And there's a new national study coming out today with the title Physical Attractiveness and the Accumulation of Social and Human Capital in Adolescence and Young Adulthood. Translation, the better looking you are in high school, the better the chances you will get through college. Sociologists say the phenomenon applies to both men and women across races and class divides. But what if you weren't all that good looking in high school, but you had that certain je ne sais quoi? What does that do for later success? Bet they didn't test for that. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.